Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Normally on this program, what I do is tell you about what we're going to be talking about, and then I tell you about the person with whom we will be talking about the subject of the day. I'm going to change that up a little bit. I want to tell you about Sarah Feinblum. She is an award-winning director, producer, and editor whose work includes documentaries, dramatic narratives, and fundraising videos. She is also the founder and director of Good Docs, an educational distribution company specializing in human rights and social issue documentaries. Her latest project, which is the subject of today, is What Do You Believe Now? The Spiritual Journeys of American Millennials. It's premiering at the 42nd Mill Valley Film Festival, and it's a new feature-length follow-up to her 2002 documentary, What Do You Believe? The Religious and Spiritual Lives of American Teenagers. In the 2019 Before and After film, a Catholic, pagan, Jew, Muslim, Lakota, and Buddhist offer their deeply personal faith journeys, their life challenges, and evolving ideas about higher powers, life purpose, the nature of suffering, religious intolerance, and death. The 2002 documentary aired on PBS stations and screened internationally at venues including the Mill Valley Film Festival and the American Academy of Religion. It was voted one of 10 best videos for young adults in 2003 by the American Library Association, and is shown at over 2,000 schools and colleges in the United States and internationally. She also created and led workshops nationally and internationally on interfaith dialogue and religious diversity. Her other projects include Earth Water Woman in 2013, about Rastafarian women environmentalists in Trinidad, which premiered at the Trinidad and Tobago Film Festival, and her documentary on LGBT activists in Jamaica called Many Loves, One Heart. She has led national workshops on violence prevention for schools, nonprofits, and public health organizations. Her film, Daughters and Sons, Preventing Child Trafficking in the Golden Triangle, in 2005, profiles a program that saves children from sex trafficking and was featured on NPR, won the award for Best Short in Child Advocacy Artivist Film Festival, and helped raise over $250,000. In Search of the Heart of Chocolate in 2008 premiered at the Palm Springs International Short Film Festival. Sarah has a bachelor's in political science from Columbia University and an MA in education from Tufts University. She has taught high school, social studies, ESL, and youth filmmaking workshops. It is amazing to think that she has time to even talk to us today. But we welcome to Common Threads, Sarah Feinblum. Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
So you do have a few seconds when you're not doing something amazing, huh?
Thank you. I do. And I'm really happy to be talking to you today.
Well, yeah, let's give a little bit of background. I received an email from an associate of yours saying, hey, there's this film that's coming out, and we know you're involved in interfaith dialogue, and so you might want to take notice. So I did take notice, and I thought the title, of course, really grabbed me, and that is, What Do You Believe Now? The Spiritual Journeys of American Millennials. And so I got in touch with your associate, and later on, you and I got in touch, and we communicated a little bit. And I have since seen the film, and I thought, no, this is definitely something for Common Threads. So to recap a little bit about what you did, you produced and directed one documentary back in 2002, entitled, What Do You Believe? The Religious and Spiritual Lives of American Teenagers. And then you went back, you found the same people in 2019, and then you make What Do You Believe Now? The Spiritual Journeys of American Millennials. So, question, when you made the film in 2002, did you have it in your head, I'm going to check up on these people later on and see what happens?
No. That was pretty much the first film I'd ever made. And I thought, this is it. It's just going to be about teenagers. And it's going to be about the six that I profiled. And there was actually, I actually interviewed 200 teenagers to find those six. And some of the other ones were included, but I focused on those six at a certain time in their life as teenagers. And I never thought I would ever do a follow-up. Sometimes with a couple of them, I did ask them some questions about their future, but that wasn't something that I had in my head at all.
So then what made you decide, hey, I'm going to see if these phone numbers still work?
Well, you know, I actually, when I made the first one, I don't even think I had a cell phone for part of it. And a lot of people, I guess they had emails. I don't know. They had emails that weren't working anymore. But some of them I still had maybe a phone number, maybe an email. But the big reason that I did the follow-up, I think, well, there was a couple of reasons, was every time I showed it, and I continued to show the first film many years after I made it. I guess it really struck a chord. There was really nothing out there about teenagers' experience of sort of the divine, the afterlife, all the big life questions that are raised by religion and spirituality. There wasn't really a film that looked at that. There were films that looked at, you know, what clergy felt and what adults felt, but there wasn't anything about teenagers who were struggling with these big questions. Anyway, I showed this film all over the place, and people would keep asking me, well, what happened? Well, what happened to this one? What happened after this one went to Israel? He thought he might find God there. Did he? What about this one? And so that kind of kept coming back to me, and I kept thinking, oh, well, I guess I could try to find out and maybe add some text. But then over the years, it started to feel like maybe there was something more to add on, and maybe foolishly, because it was very hard, I decided that I was going to try to find the six of them. And at the same time, actually, one of them found me on Facebook. And when he found me, he's the Native American one, he really very urgently asked me to make a follow-up, that he wanted to continue what he talked about when he was a teenager. He wanted to see the film again. He really wanted to make a follow-up. Would I come and interview him again? And I think that sort of invitation really made me feel like this was something I should do, because it was really generated by the subjects, and I responded to that. So
and I will say the young man you're speaking of, the Lakota, that's one of the most powerful stories in the film. It really is.
Yeah.
So
it really is.
and I'm curious. So you made the first film in 2002. The second one was released just at the end of last year. When did you start working on the second film?
So the second film, I think I started working on it in 2016. I was able to connect with the six young people who are now, you know, in their 30s. When I'd met them, they were around 16 and 17. So I started working on it in 2016. And I thought that the hardest thing would be to just find them and get to them and get to film them, because they live all over the country and they work and they have children. And It's hard to schedule. Well, I was able to accomplish that within about a year. But then the really hard part that I didn't anticipate was editing it, because I decided that instead of just focusing on where they are now, I was going to weave their stories of, you know, in the 2017 with their stories from 1999. I was going to find a way to go back and forth in time. So the whole thing, the second film, took about 3 years of my life. But that's pretty typical for documentary filmmakers. I mean, you know, some of them will spend 10 or 20 years making a film.
Sure,
so
sure.
So maybe 3 years was fast.
And it was certainly worth it. Because really, if you did not edit it that way with the old footage, you really would have to see the first film to appreciate the second. Because the juxtaposition, I mean, that really sells it. That was quite impressive to me.
Thanks. Well, I was going to say it was such a cool opportunity. I mean, you asked this question before. You said, well, did you know you were going to make a follow-up? Well, I didn't. But when I went back to the old footage, the footage from 1999 and 2000 and 2001, I decided that we were just going to look at everything to see if there was any hidden gems that weren't, that I hadn't used, that were just kind of in there in the raw footage. And as we looked through, we found things. I did ask them questions, you know, what do you think you'll be like when you're an adult, or what might happen to you, or do you think you're going to change, or do you care if you marry somebody from the same faith? Or I had asked those questions, so I was able to kind of grab things and things that no one had ever seen but me, because they were just living on the old tapes. So and then there were sometimes I was kind of like, oh, I really wish I'd asked them more. I wish I'd thought that I was going to follow up. But, you know, you do what you do at the time, and then you sort of, then there were unexpected and pleasant hidden gems that I could bring into the 2019 follow-up.
Sure. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Sarah Feinblum. She is the producer-director of What Do You Believe Now? The Spiritual Journeys of American Millennials. And, you know, Sarah, most of the time, whenever we do a show that is promoting a film, we assume that that film will be available in Western Michigan, where this program is broadcast. And at this point, we do not have an opportunity to say, hey, it's going to be at such and such a theater on such and such a date. That might change, but at this date, we do not have something like that. However, we do have people who listen by way of podcast, and they might be able to see this film. So if somebody is listening in some far-flung city, whether it's in Missouri or Florida, Connecticut, whatever, how is the best way to find if the film is in their neighborhood?
Well, that's such a good question. So since it's just been released, there may be some film festivals coming up where it's going to be showing. It will be showing at University of Southern California on February 20th. They're doing a screening, and it will be shown in Massachusetts at Bridgewater State University sometime in April. But I'm actually... because I'm an independent filmmaker and I don't have a big marketing machine, I'm distributing it myself right now, and I'm distributing it through my company called Good Docs. That's GOODDOCS, and then it's a .net, so gooddocs.net. And people can go there and they can approach us about having a screening at their church or at their community center or at their school or at their university. And if they have a local theater and they want to do some kind of interfaith event, they can get in touch with us and we can help arrange that. That's a huge goal of mine to get it out there, because I think that, you know, yes, I wanted to make a pretty looking film and something that was interesting to watch, but I really wanted to, most importantly, have this film be a conversation starter, a way to convene people, to bring people together, to talk about religious and spiritual diversity in the United States. So I'm really glad you asked me that question, because I'm really hoping that people will see the use of it in their own communities and they'll be able to bring people together to dialogue and to meet each other in the way that I've sort of laid it out in the film, where you get to meet these six people who have very different perspectives but share a common humanity and a common kind of quest for meaning.
You mentioned that the first film from 2002 was broadcast on PBS.
Yes.
And I'm curious, is that at all a possibility? Is that something that you'd be working on?
I'm trying, but it's really hard. So if you know anybody, or if anybody wants to bring it to their local PBS station, that would be wonderful. You know, you're catching me at kind of an interesting juncture, because making documentaries, it's pretty hard. It seems really cool when you watch it. If it's edited well, it kind of goes down smoothly, but the process of doing it is really hard. And so I'm kind of taking a little bit of a break before I try to figure out more how to get it out there. But I have submitted it to a couple PBS programs and I've been turned down.
Really?
So in all transparency, but I'm going to keep trying. And I don't know. This is kind of a unique film, because it's not really about one thing. It's about a lot of different things all woven together, which makes it, I think, really different, and then also kind of hard to program neatly into a specific sort of, let's say somebody wants to do something just about Native American issues. Well, this film has that, but it also has Buddhist and Jewish and Catholic. It's got a lot of other perspectives. You know, if you wanted to have something that was just about LGBT issues and religion, well, it has that, but it's not exclusive to that. So it's kind of hard to find its niche. It's in this more interesting kind of interfaith, cross-cultural niche. And I don't know if the world is totally ready for it, but you are, because this is the kind of...
Yeah, this is what we do.
Things
this
that
is
you're
what we
interested
do. Sure,
in.
Sure. And
yeah.
I didn't realize when I asked the question, I didn't realize that you are going station by station, that you didn't, when the first one aired, it wasn't like it was broadcast on the PBS network. You aired them on individual PBS affiliates. Got it. That's a whole different thing. And you have my sympathy. I understand a part of the business, and I know that that can be very, very challenging. But God bless your
efforts.
It's okay.
It's one way. You know, now some films end up on Hulu or Netflix. I don't know what's going to happen with this film. I'm just doing my best to make it available through Good Docs, and then hopefully somebody will see its value and want to show it. And people have already started to, and I would have to look at the list, but people are already acquiring it and they're showing it through their synagogues, their churches, on their college campuses without me, and they can do that. And then some people are bringing me to come talk and to facilitate. Sometimes I'm facilitating interfaith dialogue. So it's just starting. We're just at the beginning.
Okay, no, that's wonderful. About the film itself, what I find interesting is that when you did the first one, you were, I don't know if on the cusp, but fairly close to on the cusp of a sea change in the American spiritual / religious landscape. That is to say, we're getting deeper and deeper into that transition where people are not necessarily abiding by the religion of their upbringing, the religion of their ancestry. There's a lot more opportunity for choice then and now than there was previously. And did you assume when you made the first one, did you assume that was going to be the case, that you were going to be talking to people who were born in one tradition or no tradition and then did some seeking and then found themselves in a comfortable spiritual home?
Let's see, let me think how to answer this one. I didn't think that there was going to be so much maybe kind of attrition or falling away. I didn't assume that. I felt at that time, and as I was kind of learning about the world myself, that, you know, I understood that the United States was a pretty strongly Christian identified population, that most people were Christians, and that I knew people who were sort of Catholics but questioning their church, or that I knew people who were Jews that were, you know, not really following, but they still identified with their institutions, and they were still attending them in some ways. That was kind of my own peer group. When I met the teenagers, I met 200 teenagers. I literally interviewed 200 teenagers. But I kind of skewed the ones that I chose away from the ones that were really firm and committed to their belief systems, because I felt like there wasn't really a story there. I was kind of looking for those teenagers that were struggling with something, that were questioning. And so I think that was kind of what was of interest to me. But I think now, understanding kind of larger trends, they were kind of harbingers of what has become much more prevalent, that there's a lot of young people in that kind of questioning and spiritual but not religious, or breaking away from their parents' traditions, that's happening at a much quicker pace. But I was kind of more interested in just finding young people that were in the process of figuring it out, because that to me was rich material to explore. But they ended up, you know, maybe being kind of a harbinger of what was to come.
Sure, sure. When you were making the first one and there were teenagers, did you have any negative or just interesting experiences with any of the parents? Or was everybody just good to go?
That's such a good question. You know, I did. I found this one, I mean, this is a long time ago, so I got to remember the details, but I remember finding this one really wonderful teenager that I wanted to be one of the main six, and their parents said absolutely not. They knew that their kid was going to criticize their religion, and they said no, I couldn't film their son. So I had to kind of give up that, you know, and it's hard because, like I said, I interviewed these 200 teenagers, and I knew that I was looking for certain storylines, and I was looking for certain religious and spiritual traditions to represent. And so when it would be hard to find them, you know, I have to hang around at high schools and mosques and Buddhist temples. And I mean, it was hard. And when I would find one that I really thought was perfect, if I couldn't pursue them because their parents wouldn't let them, that was very frustrating. But, you know, I'm the kind of person that just sticks a camera in somebody's face and then tries to make them look bad. And there's filmmakers that also just, they're very much sort of...
aggressive. I understand that.
Yeah. And that's fine. There's cases where there's people that really need, you know, they need to be hounded by journalists so that they can be confronted. But in my case, I'm always very careful about this, and I never turn on the camera before I have permission. But when you're interviewing teenagers like I was in, you know, 1999 and 2000, and then you really have to get their parents' permission.
Sure.
So
let me stop you right there, Sarah, because we are down to the wire on this episode of Common Threads, but I have more questions, so please come back next week.
Oh, I would love to do that. Okay, thanks for asking me.
You're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. My guest today was Sarah Feinblum. She is the producer-director of What Do You Believe Now? The Spiritual Journeys of American Millennials. And you can learn more about that at gooddocs, that's DOCS.net. Please join us next week for Common Threads.